It's Thursday, January 31st, 2013, and welcome to episode 144 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Well, welcome back to another episode. Okay, we're back and still trying out our new music.
That's right.
So this time, I'd like to welcome everybody to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. So just seems like we were here not too long ago.
You know, we're wrapping up the first month of 2013 already, and I just can't even believe it.
Yeah, and this time, got a little bit of magic going on because just want to let everybody know that we're recording this with Cindy on Monday.
That's right.
And this episode is due to come out on Thursday, so we've got two or three days in between, but Cindy's getting ready to hit the road again.
I am. I'm going to D.C. We have our National Teaching with Primary Sources Directors Meeting.
Okay.
And so going out there and do some planning for the coming year of what we're going to do with the program and learn about new things at the Library of Congress. I get to come back and share with everyone.
Oh, that'll be neat.
Yeah. And so luckily we have this option. We can do it like this where we prepare it in advance.
Yep. So we'll work on this. We're going to talk about a couple of different topics this time. One of them is going to be on phishing. So we'll just go ahead and get started right away on this. So here we go. Okay, welcome to our first segment, and up first today, I thought we would spend a little bit of time talking about phishing.
Actually, I believe it's catfishing.
Catfishing
That's
in particular,
right.
And I guess we need to back up, and it's phishing with a PH, not the regular kind, although I believe the catfishing is spelled with an F.
It is with an F, and actually, just how the conversation even started at my house, my husband came home and said something about, do you know what catfishing is? And I'm like, well, yes, growing up, Southern Illinois. And then he handed me a USA Today with an article in it, and the image at the top of the newspaper was a catfish, and that was actually, it had to do with the man Ty Tao.
Mm-hmm. From the Notre Dame football player,
right.
That's been in the news recently, where educators wrap this in the, you know, the education cloak of social media,
right.
And, you know, a little bit about reputation and things, and just some of the, you know, the dark side of technology. For the last couple of months, I mean, if you've been, you know, going through the bowl season, you know, mm-hmm. all the football games and everything, but I'll let you do the pronunciation if you would, but the Notre Dame football player.
Manti,
okay.
His first name.
And I'll just let you just okay. go ahead and just set it up a little bit
right.
for us.
All right. Well, he, you know, young man from Notre Dame, phenomenal football player, was a Heisman Trophy candidate, one of the finalists, and had talked about his girlfriend who had passed away during the season, actually on the same day, I believe, as one of his grandparents. And so
this was all through social media. I don't know if it's Facebook or whatever.
Right. Well, at the time, nobody really knew. They just assumed it was his girlfriend. And then it turned out that they had never actually met in person.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was just an online
relationship
mm-hmm. which we know is common.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and now what has come out is that she never existed at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was a young man from Hawaii, where Manti is from, and that who was doing the whole thing and used
yeah.
a picture of another of a girl
yeah,
who was
allegedly
completely
been doing,
innocent.
Yeah, who had allegedly been doing this. And, you know, this is all under investigation, so this is still
right.
still an ongoing thing. But it's certainly for educators and for our students, it raises the caution flags out there to, you know, be careful.
Oh, heck yeah. We want to tell our students how important it is to validate and use reliable sources on everything that use it,
mm-hmm.
you know, on research and with their homework.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to tell them on your personal life, this is important. Too,
right.
because you know there's the commercials that say they can't put anything on the internet that's not true. Where'd you read that on the internet?
Right.
You know, and so it's important that we're arming students with the skills
right.
to be able to tell a difference. And now, no, we can't with their friends and with relationships. Obviously, we can't control that. But just helping them look for clues,
right,
for online resources and things like that, that, you know, they just use those skills that they have.
Because the generation today is something that we never dealt with,
right,
because the tools have become so powerful and so global in scope that there's a lot of power there.
Right.
But there's also a lot of potential for abuse. So.
There is. And there are people out there that are willing to take advantage of people, right, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And this went on for a long time, that the person the person who was victimizing, mm-hmm, Manti, he was, you know, it was an investment of time and energy for him.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of people doing things like this. And I knew it was common, but I didn't realize how common.
I wasn't aware of the term catfishing and things, and, you know, doing a little bit of research and things for the show. But as you said, it is quite common.
Right.
And they invest the time and try developing that trust relationship. And from what I was reading, there was, a lot of articles where they're wanting to, like, send money or something.
Right.
You know, to get some monetary gain or whatever from it.
Sometimes it's just mean. Just someone being mean.
And bullying, yeah. Of course, right, you know, we've dealt with that for years, too, both in the the online world as well as the real world,
right,
the analog world.
So in addition to the social skills, now we're helping our students develop in interactions face-to-face.
Right.
Now we're also in our classrooms teaching them how to interact with people electronically,
mm-hmm,
and how to compose themselves and what to invest in and what not to invest in as far as gaining information and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really was. I mean, there was a documentary. It's on. There's a program on MTV all about this now.
Oh,
so,
really?
You know, I haven't seen the show, but it was like, okay, this is a major issue right now that's being discussed. And so, you know, it was a new term for me for a problem I was aware of.
Yeah.
But I think it's something in classrooms that is probably coming up, and teachers probably are talking about
it. Right, something to put on our radar screens and, you know, to learn a little bit more about. So we just wanted to raise the awareness out there. And in this recent example in the media, certainly, you know, got a lot of attention. So
absolutely.
We're back, and with me this morning is Mike Gioia, who is the security officer here at Eastern Illinois University. And we're a couple days past when Cindy recorded her segment here. So Cindy's in Washington, D.C. right now, so we're doing a little bit of time travel. But Cindy and I talked a little bit about catfishing, which was a new term to me, and the Manti Te'o from Notre Dame and the controversy and things that are going on there. Since we're working with electronic resources all the time, I think it's important for us to review from time to time just some of the safety concerns and some of the, what I call phishing with a PH, attacks and things that are pretty regular. So welcome, Mike.
Good morning.
I would like to just start out with, can you just describe your definition of what phishing is with a PH, P-H-I-S-H?
Phishing is It's actually a confidence scheme. It's a very low-tech method to gain information from individuals, sensitive information, to credit card information, financial, just login credentials to get to different areas. Sometimes social security numbers are asked to steal someone's identity. And it's just a very low-tech way to get access to sensitive areas.
And usually done through email, through the online correspondence, and through what I call social engineering, you know, where
yes,
they're trying to trick you into.
Yes, and that's basically, it's all through email. The last three major breaches that have been out there, there was a major breach in Florida in higher education, and that started with a phishing email. Someone grabbed the credentials of someone in the financial aid office, and then from there they accessed the state-level financial aid system and got all that information.
So they were trying to get somebody's password? Is that what started?
Right, yeah. They asked for their password, their username and password, probably under a spoof, like your mailbox is going to be locked up, or
mm-hmm,
it's oversized, or your computer has a virus.
Yeah.
Something to cause fear in the user.
Yeah,
and that
a sense of urgency.
Yeah, they may get in trouble, or, you know, they're causing harm when they're not.
Yeah, and it's very common. I get them regularly, and this education part for end users of email, it's so important to educate, you know, everyone out there. Any email user have seen these things. In fact, this morning I've got one, and if you don't mind, let me just read just a paragraph. I'll cut out some of this information, but here's a typical one that I routinely get. It says, "Dear webmail user, we will like to inform you that soon we'll be upgrading our webmail to a new interface, so if you see this message, all you need to do is click the link below and activate with your correct email ID for trial of the new webmail interface to see if it works well." And then they provide you a URL link there. And this one's a little bit different because it actually uses a person's name. I'm just going to say, "Thank you, John Doe team," or whatever out there. So they're trying to personalize a little bit, or they'll impersonate your IT team, which, you know, is fairly common too.
Right. And that one's close to an example of what we call spear phishing. Spear phishing is a more focused type of scheme. Where they will try to use something that they'll go out and do a little research on the organization's website and try to use something that's familiar to the user so that they feel like it is authentic when it's not. And it's pretty interesting. You know, we get ones here that are pretty close, or the link goes to a replica of our login screen for our webmail client.
Right.
And you just have to be careful. There's always some type of grammatical mistake.
Well, that one there, and I read it word for word. "We will like to inform you," instead of "we would like to inform you."
There's usually some type of grammatical error, or what we've seen here as Institute of Higher Education with the state that we've copyrighted something. So if you see something like that, you know it's not authentic. Mm-hmm. You know, and the main thing is that any legitimate organization isn't going to ask for a username and password through email with a link. And if an organization you may find out is legitimate that's asking for that, you probably don't want to deal with them because they have probably low security standards.
Right.
You know, your banking, places you do banking, any state organization is not going to provide a link and ask for username and password in an email. If they need you to change your password or something, they're going to say, you know, just go here. They're not going to provide the link. And they're not going to ask for username and password. They're not going to ask you to reply to the email. They're saying there's probably an issue with your account. Please visit your account so that you go to the correct web page.
Right.
And it's just phishing is just rampant now.
Yeah.
10 years ago, information security and any type of computer security was very lacking. It was a very new field. The internet was just emerging, basically. So there was no technical safeguards, or there were very crude systems of safeguards with firewalls and
Here we have various filters and things, so once you catch something you can, as I say, kind of nip it in the bud before it gets distributed out to everyone.
It's very advanced in the field of information security. Is very advanced technology wise now, and therefore phishing is actually the easiest form to get information now, as opposed to big viruses.
Right.
The weakest link in anything we're in information security when it comes is the user.
Mm-hmm.
They're the easiest one to manipulate or social engineer to steal credentials and get in.
And unfortunately, you know, the dark side of technology, the bad guys are out there, you know, constantly probing and doing those things. So we could go on and on and on about security, such a huge topic. But the other thing, just to make people aware of, what would be your recommendations? I know I kind of have my own system and, you know, like a little algorithm and things to keep things. But I know many, many people will use like the same user ID and the same password for multiple accounts. So if one would be compromised, you know, they say, you know, say your email account, and then they would have possibly your bank information or something as well.
Sure. You know, a lot of people do that because we have accounts everywhere, online, electronic accounts. I think I have 24 accounts, different accounts.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So it's hard to come up with 24 unique usernames and passwords. Sometimes you don't have a choice on your username. Sometimes the system forces you to have a certain standard username. With that, there's a couple things you can do. You know, never write down your passwords anywhere. In a Word document or anything on your computer, but come up with a very strong password, you know, over 10 characters, a lot of special characters, and you can maybe use those for a couple multiple accounts to do that. That would be pretty hard for the classic brute force method of just running a program to try to figure out what your password is to get that compromised.
Yeah. And we'll put some links out there in the show notes. I know we've got some links to some sites and the password, you know, the complexity issues and how easy they are to crack today, you know, with some brute force attacks.
Right.
But we've got a lot of links out there to give you some suggestions on how to handle that. Also, in regards to the multiple accounts and things, as you say, we've got, as we move more and more of our world moves to the digital world, I mean, we've got passwords and things everywhere. And I know there are some things like 1Password and use some password vault type things, but that's a little bit.
Right, yeah, or Password Keeper. I think there's a couple apps that.
KeePass, there's a number of them.
Right, that you can program all your passwords into it, and then you have one pretty usually strong password to even get into that application. And then I know one I've seen it, after 3 failed login attempts, it erases everything that's in that file. Just in case it is someone that's
that's another good point, because we're getting these mobile devices. You know, I've got a tablet sitting here in front of me and our mobile phones and things, and those things are also, you know.
Right. It's easy to, as we get, technology gets smaller, it's easier to just steal things and try to, you know, get in through that way.
Yeah.
So it's better to have like passwords and
and it's good practice to change your password occasionally, right, too, and like here on campus we're forced to every so often,
right,
just to protect ourselves, because you don't necessarily know if somebody, you know, has your password or something. They could just be kind of sleeping or sitting back there waiting for something,
right? And a lot of the phishing attempts that we see here, when it leads to compromised accounts, when we contact the individual, the first thing we ask if they gave their information away. Usually it's no. There's a couple reasons why they would say no. They're afraid they're going to get in trouble, which is not any remotely close to a policy we have here on campus. You know, they're the victim of a scheme, and we try to tell them that. But then sometimes they may come back and say, well, about a month ago, I remember maybe possibly giving my password and my credentials to an email. And then, like I said, the phisher stays dormant for a long time and then uses that password.
Yeah. So, you know, occasionally change those. The other thing that's kind of one of those holes out there is, you know, I use similar accounts to sign up for other accounts. So if you forget your password, you know, it's like send it to that email account. And if the bad guys have the password for that email account, they can basically say, well, reset my password for me. And there was a real famous case, well, it was last year, I believe, with Apple, one of the bloggers and things. Somebody called up, I think it was Matt Home or something.
Right, and Engadget, or
Gizmodo. One of the major blogs.
I think it was Gizmodo.
Yeah.
They ended up calling Apple and
said, hey, I forgot my password.
Right, and they were able to work through a system of, they had certain information like birthday and an Apple ID. They were able to get their Apple ID password reset. And then from that, they were able, because they had that reset and had control of that account, they were able to work in into a Gmail account, possibly. I don't remember all the details.
Yeah. But. Well, that was very malicious, because they ended up doing a wipe of like his MacBook Air, right, and his iPad. I mean, they wiped everything out. So that was a very malicious.
Right.
So, you know, as I said, the bad guys are out there. So we just want to raise awareness to everybody. And as I said, we're very fortunate here at Eastern to have a security officer and an expert in the area. So whenever we run across those issues, you know, we can contact Mike. And I would encourage you out there. I know in the K-12 environment, you may not necessarily have somebody on premise or on site, but going up the chain at some level, you know, somebody's administering, you know, those email servers and things, and somebody has to deal with this. So.
Right. There should be someone that has a little focus on security, even if it's just your server admin, or just in charge of your network at your school. They should still have some knowledge in information security. And then there's a lot of information about phishing out on the web. Even Google now, you can report phishing sites, and they work to take down these phishing sites.
Yeah, and I don't know how effective it is. I would think it would be pretty effective. But one thing that we do here is, if we see a suspected phishing attempt, we have an email address that we can forward that email to. And I don't think it goes to your team or whatever, that you can kind of go out there and, as I said, put a block on it, or so it doesn't, you know, distribute further and further and cause more problems.
Right. That's what happens. It goes to our team here, and then someone will work to get it blocked in our network at the firewall level, so that if someone does click the link, they actually can't get to that web page. It just says this page has been blocked.
Yeah.
And then we work with what we're seeing a lot now is what we call is e-forms. Online e-forms.
A lot of Google Forms, probably.
Google Docs with these e-forms, some other PHP-type forms. And then we try to work with the issuer of that form to get it taken down. Google's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to report abuse.
You might mention that. You were talking earlier about that. I'm not aware of.
Right. Yeah. If you go to it's an authentic Google page. That's a form training. It usually says username, password, date of birth, that sensitive information. And then it goes to whoever created that form. Google itself doesn't create the form. But if you go to that and at the bottom it says report abuse, in there it gives you a couple options, five options, and one of them is phishing. Phishing in a malicious site. Mm-hmm. And if you click that, it sends a report to Google, and then they work to see if it is true and then take it down.
Yeah.
If it's not, turnaround time is usually about a day to 2 days. And that's what we do. We'll block it first at our firewall, report the site, and then wait for it to be taken down.
Yeah, and that's something that seems, as I say, it's growing. It's becoming more and more common. But I noticed that a lot on Twitter. I mean, it was becoming more prevalent on Twitter. And one of the options that you have is to report for spam and block.
Right. And it's like phishing and the spoofing and the confidence schemes through this. It's because it is so easy to do.
Yeah,
The hacker will just take the path of least resistance.
Yeah, one of the challenging things though is we're dealing with multiple companies out there, and everybody has a different set of policy. Raising that awareness is so difficult. And maybe the answer to this, but every now and then I will see somebody in my Twitter network that I follow, and you'll get a DM saying somebody saying something about one of those things, and it's one of those phishing attack type things.
Right.
If you were the victim of that, what do you do as a Twitter user? Do you know?
I don't know entirely, but I think you would change your password, obviously. Get control back of your account. You can send out an apology to the people that maybe have been spammed by it, a tweet. And then I'm not quite sure if Twitter has a reporting feature yet.
They're like, 700 million accounts or something. It's just unbelievable the volume they're dealing with.
Right. This is another new and emerging area, mm-hmm. so there's going to be people getting taken advantage of.
Yeah, there is a place out there to report that. But, and also this is another recurring and ongoing and is going to become huge in the future is abandoned accounts.
Right.
Because they're so easy, they're free to go out there and set up. And I know I've seen some of my friends out there that have this, and I get this message. It's like, I know they're no longer active and, forgotten about it, so somebody's kind of hijacked their account.
Right. They've either gotten in, they know this account's been inactive, and they figure out a way to get in, and then it's just their dormant, and they bring it back, and it's an account no one uses.
Yeah.
That's why you have to take care of yourself out here and try to identify what is legitimate and what's not.
Yeah.
It's just this big scheme.
Yeah. So moral of the story is let's be careful out there.
Yeah. And it's pretty interesting, especially if you talk to people that have been victims. It just seems like humans, when they have their integrity questioned, they just throw all logic out the window.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that with catfishing, and other things called like ransomware. Mm-hmm. You go to a website that's been compromised, and it looks like the Department of Homeland Security or the FBI, mm-hmm. and they say you've committed a crime, and they will take it off your record if you pay them $200.
Right. Right.
And they'll just empty their pockets and give out their credit card information. When if they just take a minute and think about it and realize this is not legitimate.
Yeah.
There's no urgent rush to report things or fill out forms. Your account's not going to be closed. And even if it is closed for something legitimate, you can always call and get it back.
Right.
And take the time to talk to someone and figure it out.
So part of that's just the awareness and recognition. As I said, just be careful out there with that. So Okay, well, we will have a lot of links out there. Any last thoughts?
No, just really that. Just be calm and about it. Think through what you're going to do. Use some logic. Don't do anything in a panic. Yeah. Like I said, that's the main thing.
And I think, you know, if you do suspect that, changing that password quickly is a protection against, you know.
Right.
So, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My technology pick of the week this week is using audio in Microsoft Word.
And my question for you is, why would you put audio in Microsoft Word?
Well, I have been doing a lot of work recently with our switch over to Desire to Learn, our online learning management system.
Right?
And one of the things that we struggle with as online teachers in particular is, how do we get feedback back and forth to students? So, of course, we, you know, for years we communicate, you know, Microsoft Word documents, just written text and plain, but Microsoft Word certainly has the capability of adding a lot of multimedia, whether it be audio or video. And another reason, and over the break, another thing that my wife teaches in the K-12 environment, and, you know, one of the things that we're doing a lot of, and particularly in the K-12 environment, is developing IEPs.
Oh, absolutely.
So a lot of those IEPs state that, you know, the learner needs assistance with reading test or something to them. I think I was just looking before in the show notes, way back in October, one of my tech picks of the week was a WordTalk plugin.
Yes, it was.
What that plugin would do is you could put your cursor at the beginning of a document and click, and it would change the text to speech with a computer, you know, synthetic voice.
So it would read it too.
So it would read. But then, you know, that's kind of mechanical sounding, and the, you know, enunciation and everything isn't perfect. But if you're a teacher in a situation where, you know, you need to provide, whether it be a test environment or just simply delivering content, and you need to have audio reinforcement, adding an audio comment is very easy to do in Word. So what I thought I would do is, again, I know this is an audio podcast, but I've got the computer up here in front of Cindy and myself. So I thought I would just open up a Word document. And the first challenge is getting the audio. And there's a number of different ways to do that. I happen to be in front of a Windows computer right now, but you could use any computer, Mac or Linux. It doesn't matter. And I'm going to use one of my favorite audio recording tools, Audacity.
Oh, there you go. I was going to say, are there particular formats of audio that...
Certainly are, and that's a whole other show. but by default, Audacity saves as a WAV file.
Okay.
Or we could change it to an MP3 file.
So those are pretty common.
Mm-hmm, very common. So what I'm going to do is bring up Audacity, and I'm just going to record just one sentence. So I'm going to bring up Audacity. Very simple. There's a big red record button. I've got our microphone set up here. So I'm just going to go ahead and hit record. And I don't know if I actually have my mic, since I'm doing the podcast, if this will work or not, but I'll go ahead and try it. This is a test. Testing, 1, 2, 3. This is only a test. And then I'll pause that. Now, I don't know if I'll be able to play this back.
This is a test. Testing, 1, 2, 3. This is only a test.
Okay, so I had that coming out my external speakers. I don't know if you caught that or not.
I could hear it.
Okay. So that all that is just an audio file. So I'm just going to come up here and say File. Export, and let me throw it out on the desktop, and testing for podcast example is just what I'm going to call it. And as I said, it's a WAV file. I could change it to an MP3 or whatever, but I'm just going to say save. Now then, I've got Microsoft Word open, and a couple episodes back we talked about track changes.
Yes, we did.
So it brought back some memories of the days that I was using track changes quite a lot for my dissertation. So I'm going to go out here in this document, and I'm going to put my cursor at the end of the line. Now, what this could be, whatever I just recorded would be what would be on the Word screen.
Okay.
Okay, so a paragraph or whatever. So I'm just going to go up to Review tab. I'm using Office 2007, and I'm going to say Add New Comment, and there's track changes.
Right.
So it asked me, what's my comment? And I'm just going to say Audio Comment Number 1. And then from here, I'm going to go over to my Insert tab, and in Microsoft Word 2007, if you go to Insert, there is underneath the text portion, something says Object. So I want to insert an object, and it says From File, So I'm going to choose create from file. And since I just created that audio file out on my desktop, and what did I call it? Do you remember, Cindy?
I don't.
You don't. You're supposed to be keeping track for me.
I'm mesmerized watching this.
Okay. So, and if you saw my desktop, you would know why. So here it is. I saved it. And if I open that up, so I'm in my, still in my audio comment here, and I've got to go out here and find it. There it is. And say insert. And then say OK. And what that does, if you look up here in the track changes, it says audio comment one, and there it is as a WAV file. So now then, I have attached an audio comment, and it shows in this particular example, it's, I guess it's a salmon color or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say file, save as. I'm going to save my Word document. This time, I'm going to throw it in documents, AY1213. So now then, if I would attach that to an email and send that to a student, they could open it up, and the track changes are there. And then let me turn my speakers up. Again, I don't have this plugged into the mixer, so I'm going to have to do this externally. But whenever I open it up, this is what they see with the track changes, and they see audio comment one and then a little WAV file. And if I double-click on that, that will open up the audio file. It says, do I want to open it? Yes, I do. And then
this is a test, testing. Only a test.
Okay, and that's it. So you could add that to as many. And what I've seen other teachers do is for each test question, you know, mm-hmm. you'd have like audio for question one. It would read the question to the student and then give, you know, choice A, choice B, choice C, whatever, if it's a multiple choice test.
Ah, so because I was thinking primarily of just for feedback when returning an assignment.
That's what I'm interested right. for the desire to learn for the online comments right. and things. But also, one of the nice things about desire to learn, there's actually an audio button that you can click for students. So,
okay.
But what's nice about this, particularly, again, you were an English teacher.
Right.
So not only could you give visual feedback and, you know, write, you know, the written words,
right.
but you could also speak.
I like that. That's really cool because sometimes, especially on a huge written assignment, more words are not what they need.
Right, right.
And that if you verbalize it or listening to the way it is said, it helps them realize that it needs to be written
right.
in a different way. And so that's a nice option that'll let you do that when you just don't have time to meet with every one of
right.
them one-on-one.
And that also alleviates the problem, you know, because not everybody needs that. So it's, once again, you know, in teaching, we try to do these multimodal type pedagogies to get out there to hit the auditory, the visual, mm-hmm. and the kinesthetic. And that gives you complete flexibility. And, you know, the other issue, again, particularly in K-12, is like you're always trying to track down an assistant so they can go, you know, read a portion
sure.
or, you know, assist with an individual education plan. Out there. So this just gives you a little bit more flexibility with that. And then I've also been working a lot with doing some digital notes. And one of the great things that I'm really falling in love with this Windows 8 tablet with the digitizer pen is you can overlay those notes because Word is enabled or
right.
pen enabled, which means you can, you know, provide ink comments, do the inking. And then, I guess the ultimate thing would be doing a little screen recording as you were walking through a student's work.
Right.
So it would be almost as if they were sitting beside you, but you're doing this asynchronously.
Sure.
And then whenever you deliver that little screencast video with both your voice, your comments, and then the pen and ink overlay on top of that, it would almost be as if they were sitting there.
It would. And it's a great way to really show the student how what needs to be changed instead of just saying, you lost points for this.
Exactly. Because that's so, again, particularly
right.
in an online environment, that is so difficult to do to provide that meaningful feedback.
Right.
Because, you know, it's like, well, here's a rubric, you know, you did this, but how can we help the student improve? And this alleviates some of those barriers that we've had up to this point.
It absolutely does. That is very cool because I don't think of Word as a presentation program. And
right.
so that's where I was going. Whenever you were talking about that, I'm like, well, you don't really present with Word. And I wasn't.
We just scan the surface of the capabilities of Word.
We do. And I'm realizing that more and more. And so you completely showed me a whole new dimension of how it can be used. Very cool.
All right. So your technology pick of the week. Looks like we have another gadget.
Another toy. You know, I'm going to have to look on income taxes and see how I can write any of these off or not or what. But, no, I did get an iPad mini.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's exactly the same as the iPad, just smaller.
Do you miss the bigger one?
Not really. Every once in a while. It's hard to read long documents. Mm-hmm. I think that's my age and my mm-hmm. eyes a little bit as well. And that. But I find, you know, I use it more and more all mm-hmm. the time, especially for email and quick
things. Well, it's again the convenience factor. And that's what I found with my Nexus 7, the 7-inch mm-hmm. tablet. It just fits so naturally in my hand, and it's small enough to go in the breast pocket of my jacket. And
this fits in my purse, mm-hmm. and I can just take it with me.
It's just one of, you know, those form factors and things that, you know, people say, well, that's way too big or that's way too small. And it's like, depends upon the purpose for the device use that you're trying to use it for.
Exactly. I think I use it more as a communication tool
mm-hmm.
and source of gaining information, not so much as not productivity.
That's age old, you know, is it a consumption device or is it a production device?
Right.
So
I'm getting used to the voice command options that I Siri. Can do with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I still must not enunciate well because I get all kinds of mm-hmm. different things from what I'm asking for.
That's one thing with the Nexus 7. It learns, I guess, you know, the common phrases and the things that you do. It really does learn and get a little bit better as you use it more.
That's good because I need to play with it some more. I have tried to look at some things for the difference in the Retina display.
Mm-hmm.
And that because I think this has a higher resolution.
You don't really notice it?
I don't.
You have them side by side, I think the average person would have a hard time.
Right.
Because actually, I think that's 1024 by 768. I'd have to look up the specs exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the iPad 4 also, the newest one?
Or no, I have a 2.
Okay. Well, that is pretty close to the same resolution.
Okay.
I believe the iPad 2 and the iPad mini are close to the same.
Okay, so
the iPad 4, the latest one with the Retina display, is like twice the resolution of that.
Okay.
For, you know, everyday use, again, unless you have them side by side, I think the average person would have difficulty, you know, noticing.
Mm-hmm.
People that are, you know, are visually acute and aware of all of that, I'm sure, you know, are probably out there saying, well, I can tell the difference.
Right.
But again, it's kind of what we get used to.
And we looked at a movie on your tablet and it was amazing. The visual,
mm-hmm.
you know, the picture was so awesome. When I start my phone, my Razer, it has a little video.
Mm-hmm.
And the graphics and the images on that are amazing, mm-hmm. but I don't use it for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's kind of wasted on me.
Well, and one reason, the smaller the screen, you know, the closer those dots get together, the resolution becomes more and more important the larger the display gets.
True.
So that's why, you know, for years they said you only needed 720p on a 32-inch screen or smaller. And now, you know, here we are at 1080p, and now we're talking CES with these 4K televisions and things coming out.
Oh, I recently saw a 72-inch television, and I'm just like, wow.
Yep, with 4K, that's like $20,000,
$30,000
right now. But they are definitely coming, but it's probably going to be 4 or 5 years because, one, the processing and technology is going to have to catch up, and then secondly, even if we had that content available now, we just don't have the broadband capability to have it delivered. And that's always an issue.
Well, and a lot of, you know, mostly I'm using files from the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And those are saved in a specific, you know, different formats, but.
And for those preservationists, it's opening up a complete nether, you know, here we go again, digitizing those resources
right.
and things, because what was great 5 years ago, it's a different world today.
Right. So that's going to be interesting to see. I think different fields are going to have different uses.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be tons of uses with this 4K technology because it's like looking out a window now, the clarity of things. So.
Very cool.
All right. Thank you. That wraps it up for episode 144 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'd like to thank Cindy Rich for agreeing to record her segment a little bit earlier this week, and to Mike Gioia for stopping by today to talk to us about information security. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu. Or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
And Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.